Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
9 o'clock, Sports Radio 94. WIP, Joe Giglio with you. Dan Wilson behind the glass. He's in for Tucker Bagley. You guys with us, 215-592-9494. That is how you hop. We'll get back to the phone lines here as we debate whether or not the Eagles should go after Aaron Rodgers. And my feeling that the Phillies can't win because they're not winners. They just have a whole group of mercenary veterans who have never won a thing. Gene Segura's never had a playoff bat in his life. Bryce Harper's never been out of the first round. These guys just don't know how to win. JT Realmuto's never been on a winning team in his whole career. They don't know how to win, and it shows up every time they play in a game like Saturday night. We'll get back to all that. Right now, though, we have to go to the guest line. Jake Fisher, who I know has in the past been a listener to the show, and I appreciate that. And, you know, I said to him, you know, you have a book coming out here. When you that book is out, we got to get you on the show to talk about it. So that book is out. It is called Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. Jake also writes for Bleacher Report. He's an NBA guy, and obviously this book has a lot to do with the Sixers and how they became what they've become now. Jake, how you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. You're right. I am a listener. You're one of my favorites, and it's an honor to be here with you, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm happy to have you, and I'm excited to read your book. So before we get into like the crux of it and maybe some Sam Hinkie stories or Sixers stories, give us kind of the impetus of this. Like, how did this book come about? Obviously, this has been a big story in the NBA for a little while now, but where did you get the thought, like, you know what, there's a real story here about what's happening around the league?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up from Philly going to Sixers games, and I was writing for Liberty Ballers, you know, with Mike Levin and overlapping with our guy Spike Eskin at the lottery parties while all that was coming on, and I was in school in Boston moonlighting at night as an NBA reporter for Slam Magazine, because people forget, you know, the Celtics traded KG and Paul Pierce the very same night that Sam Hinkie traded Jrue Holiday to New Orleans to start that rebuild. And being up in Boston, being from Philly, when these teams met and when other teams like Orlando with Rob Hedigan, remember they were attached with that 4-team trade with Andrew Bynum. It was coming up all over the place. Teams tanking for that 2014 draft to get guys like Embiid and Wiggins and Parker. And I felt like I was in the eye of the hurricane, and it just kind of followed me throughout my career. And this book's kind of like an ode to all the conversations with people like Sam Hinkie that I had as coming up as a young journalist.
Jake, when do you think it started to become acceptable with fans? And I know here in Philadelphia, because I started doing a radio on WIP in 2013. So it was kind of right in the beginning of that. And I remember a lot of, you know, weekend shows I would do. And then it was still kind of controversial, right? Like, and I feel like it kind of fell on age lines. Older fans tended to hate the idea of tanking and not trying to win. Younger fans tended to understand more, or at least be more understanding of the idea. When do you think it became more acceptable with NBA fans? Because now I feel like people usually get it, right? Like, when teams do this, or, you know, like the Thunder right now, there's not much pushback from fans. It seems like everyone kind of understands this. To game the system, this is kind of what you have to do.
Well, I think it became a trend in the league because all these analytical-minded executives like Sam, like Ryan McDonough in Phoenix, like Rob Hennigan in Orlando, the Magic, you know, they poached him from OKC. When the Thunder did that whole rebuild to kind of tip this all off with Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden from 2007 to 2009, and everyone watched them jump right to the 2012 finals, coincidentally, they ran into that Miami Heat juggernaut that was built with three top five picks. And that 2014 draft class, like we just talked about, was considered to be the best class since 2003 that gave them LeBron, Wade, and Bosh. And there was this notion that, you know, we're not going to beat Miami anyway. Let's hold off a second. Let's punt a couple seasons. Let's get the next generation of those superstars. And by the time that that dynasty has kind of, you know, fallen off a little bit, we'll be ready to contend. And that idea of hope, that idea of one day competing for championships, championship tour, remind you, you know, it's not just the idea of having one shot at it. The idea of building a sustainable winner year after year after year, that hope, I think, was really appealing to a lot of the younger fans out there, like you mentioned, as opposed to just rooting for a team that was going to be a 7 or an 8 seed and that was going to get blown out in the first round. There was a better concept, a better thing worth chasing for. If you bottom out, get these superstar players, you know, one day you'll have a better opportunity to actually compete for something worthwhile.
Jake Fisher, the author here of Built to Lose, How Tanking Changed the NBA Forever. Jake, tell us some stuff you learned while doing this book. Like, what was the most enlightening thing for you during the process here? I know there's probably hundreds of interviews you did, but if one or two things stood out to you that maybe you didn't realize or just, like, you know, wasn't on your radar, then all of a sudden I was like, wow. What would it be like when you were writing this thing? What stood out to you of what you learned from who you talked to?
Yeah, my big selling pitch on the book is, you're right, I talked to over 300 people for this book. That's kind of been my calling card throughout my career. I'm a reporter through and through. I get people on the phone. I find out new information. And for this book, you know, I really was struck by the human element of the players and the coaches that were involved. Like, Sam Hinkie was trying to find a coach, for example, that was a nurturer and a teacher as much as he was a basketball tactician. And that's why he took 4 months to really mine the benches around the league to find an assistant like Brett Brown, who I found out, you know, Del Demps, the GM of the Pelicans, who Hinkie made that trade with Jrue Holiday for, he was a Spurs guy before he got to New Orleans. And Brett Brown, when he was a longtime assistant there, one time he saw Dell floundering around in the lap pool, and Brett walked in and was laughing at him and said, "You don't know how to swim. I'm going to teach you how to swim." And every day he would get in the pool, no matter if R.C. Buford or Popovich or Tim Duncan would laugh at them. Brett was teaching this guy how to swim in their Spurs Adidas gear in the pool, or something like Evan Turner and Spencer Hawes. Like, they were dying to get out of Philly that 2013-14 season. They knew that the tank was in full effect. They wanted to be competing for the playoffs. Evan Turner told me himself on multiple occasions he found Brad Stevens in the hallway in between the locker rooms, both in Philly and at TD Garden in Boston, went to Brad. They knew each other from a prior relationship, and he said, "Brad, please trade for me. My jersey's up for half off already." And, you know, right before the deadline, Evan and Spencer, you know, I have this great scene in the book. Well, the real story behind Evan posting a picture of Spencer Hawes' Barack Obama toilet paper is that they were supposed to go on vacation and meet girlfriends at the All-Star break the week before that deadline, but they got rained out. They had to stick in Philly instead. They're drinking their sorrows away at Spencer Hawes' house, and they exhausted Spencer's toilet paper supply, and that was the only roll of toilet paper left. And Evan being Evan posted on Instagram, it becomes the whole thing. So as much as I have secret pre-draft workouts and trade talk and all those types of rumors-based stuff in the book, I think the human element really was fascinating to learn about.
Yeah, well, I think those are the people you kind of forget about, right? Because you think about the big picture of tanking and rebuilding, and there are real people, like you're saying, Spencer and Evan Turner and all those guys in that Sixers team that are part of this. We're talking to Jake Fisher here. He's the author of a new book, Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. All right, Jake, let's talk about Sam Hinkie. I mean, obviously, you mentioned him in the beginning and what he did with the Sixers here. I was a fan of his from the beginning and just fascinated by what he was trying to do. What is the perception, would you say? How would you say the perception is of Sam Hinkie around the NBA, the people you talk to? Because, you know, here it's almost like he's something of a cult figure. I always wonder what people around the league think of Sam Hinkie. Is he well-respected? Is it kind of people are interested in what he could have been if he stayed here? What do you think people think of Sam?
I think he's gotten credit where credit is due in terms of drafting Joel and the thorough, you know, process, to use that term, and how he went about drafting and building the core of his team. But in terms of a human figure, he's definitely as polarizing within the league as he was outside of it. There are people who, were kind of turned off from how he definitely operated and carried himself in a lot of trade calls and conversations. Like, he was the smartest guy in the room. A lot of agents thought he was kind of shifty and a little bit dishonest. I mean, there's a story in the book. I don't know if people listening remember, but Philly traded for Andre Kirilenko at one point in that time period. And it was with the Nets, and the Sixers' old general manager, Billy King, was running that organization at the time. And Billy King and the Nets all thought, Sam told them that they were just going to cut Andre Kirilenko and let him become a free agent. But they were really adamant that Andre was going to report. But Kirilenko had a pregnant wife in Brooklyn, you know, close by to all these doctors who was having a really tough pregnancy. And Sam wasn't budging. They started fining Kirilenko for not reporting. And he was never, you know, willing to budge off of his non-guaranteed four-year minimum deal with a lot of people. Like, Dwayne Dedman is a name I know that's come up around recently, that Sixers fans have wanted to be kind of that backup center role to Joel Embiid before, obviously, they've kind of found a good guy in Dwight Howard here. And Dwayne Dedman was around in 2013-14 and wanted to stick around. Brett Brown wanted him to stick around. But Sam refused to back off that you know, bargaining chip of that four-year non-guaranteed deal and spurned Dwayne and his agent, and he left for Orlando. So there was definitely a method to the madness and a genius that a lot of people respected and still do to this day. But that human element that we talked about in that last little bit and the relationships that really are important in this business and this workplace, I think he struggled a bit in that regard, and I think that was ultimately – you know, overall, the reason why he ended up getting pushed out as well.
Jake, do you think the tanking era, and I'm not sure if it's over or it's changed now because they have tried to smooth out the lottery odds and de-incentivize it a little bit, but do you think it's been good or bad for pro basketball? Because obviously here in Philadelphia, you know, we're happy the Sixers did what they did because now we have a team contending for a championship. But ultimately, I mean, I do understand the big picture of, you know, there's a lot of teams not trying. That's not good for business. And like Adam Silver, I don't know if he did the right thing or the wrong thing, but they had to do something because it's not good for business if some teams just simply aren't trying and are bending the rules. Do you think this era has been good for the league, or do you think the negatives have kind of hurt the positives in terms of the league-wide stuff?
Yeah, I think the tanking era that I've kind of dubbed it really ended in 16, I think. It was like 2012 to 2016. It didn't just end when Sam got pushed out. It also, you know, that led to the lottery reform getting passed in 2017, and Rob Hennigan got fired then, and Ryan McDonough got pushed out, and the Kings, who were, you know, a big factor in this whole situation, ended up having some turnover. But from what the conversations I've had with people in the league office to league executives to coaches, they've all kind of said that the reason that era was an era, it was a talking point, was because it was such a brazen new strategy that was being talked about, and it was being, you know, a headline on SportsCenter, on your show, and on PTI, and you name it. And when the league passed lottery reform, and ultimately, you know, the Knicks don't get Zion in that 2019 draft, right? Like, they were supposed to get Zion. They were the worst team in the league. They were tanking for Zion. The fact that it's no longer a narrative, I think, is why it's not really an issue for the league anymore. I mean, OKC, what they're doing right now, sending Al Horford home for half the year. I mean, I logged into the Rockets game the other night, and John Wall is just sitting there courtside. He's perfectly healthy, but he's not playing. We're seeing now that teams are still having incentive to tank into the top five. Coincidentally, this 2021 draft, it's considered a five-player draft and considered to be the very best draft class since that 14 class with Embiid. That's really highlighted in the book. And, you know, OKC and Orlando and Detroit and Houston, they all have, you know, a clear goal in mind to get one of those guys. I think the real, you know, side effect and aftermath of all this is we're not going to see too many teams, I think, be like the Washington Wizards and kind of trying to compete into this play-in tournament. The majority of teams in the league now, they're either trying to contend or they're trying to tank and get there eventually. That's just what it comes down to. I talked to an assistant general manager in the Western Conference last week just for, you know, catching up and collecting information from my reporting at Bleacher Report. And he said, you know, the brainiacs like Sam got it right. If you're not in that top tier, most teams know, the coaches, the GMs, the, you know, the owners of the mid-tier teams, they know they don't have a real shot at winning the title. And their best chance, if they don't, is to go down the standings, get a high lottery odd, and hope the ping pong balls, you know, bounce in your favor. And that's kind of where we're left.
Jake, last one for you. I'm excited to read your book here. Just off of what you said there about what most teams are doing here and kind of whether it's broadcasted as much or it's a little different, but the basic premise is that, you know, the smart teams realize, hey, we're either going for a title or we're doing our best to position ourselves the right way moving forward. Do you think, and I've wondered this a lot in all sports, baseball has a real issue right now with the pace of play and the way the game is designed and analytics, and I almost think smart people, and I put this as a broad thing, but smart people in sports, they're too smart now. Like, they figured out the right way to do it, the most efficient way to do it. But I do wonder if it takes away from some of the entertainment value of sports. Where do you lie on that? Basketball, obviously, the center, because you wrote this book. But just in general, how smart people have kind of gamed the system, realized the most efficient way to play, and maybe that makes the game itself less entertaining.
Yeah, I think it's a conundrum. I mean, I might be a little biased here, being that I've only been covering the league for 8 years, but, you know, I was an adamant NBA fan growing up and listening to all the podcasts and radio and everything. And I don't think team building strategy and how rosters are constructed, I don't think it was as much of a talking point back then as it is now. And on one hand, it's been great to pump up, you know, the theories and the speculation that fans have about next summer's free agency and, oh, are these two guys going to team up? And Zion has an inflammatory quote, you know, the other week about playing in the Garden, and now it's, oh, my God, is Zion going to the Knicks? And same with Damian Lillard, you know, fans get excited. Oh, maybe he'll come to our team. That's definitely good for the league. That interest has generated, you know, 11-month news cycle now where the NBA is just like the NFL, and people are always talking about, you know, you mentioned it before I came on, should the Eagles trade for Aaron Rodgers? Those type of conversations are super exciting. But the flip side is it's definitely devalued the regular season, especially in basketball. And I think that's it. I think that is a big issue. Ratings are objectively down. I mean, I know for a fact, I cover the league for my job, and I personally don't have as much interest watching these games from, you know, April and throughout, because I kind of know what I know about all the teams already. You know, I have my opinions on who I think is good this year and who I think is going to flame out in the playoffs, all that type of stuff. That level of intrigue on a night-to-night basis is definitely starting to slip, and that's the NBA and every sports business model, right? You want every fan to go into the arena every single night thinking their team's got a shot to win, and that's just not the case anymore. And the intrigue on a random Tuesday night, for me and I think for a lot of fans, isn't there as much anymore. So you're right, it's a conundrum, but one that I think, you know, smarter people than myself are going to have to figure out that answer.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to describe it, a conundrum. Built to last, how the NBA's tanking era changed, how the NBA's tanking era changed the league forever. And how about this? You got the quote from Lee Jenkins on the cover here. You have that, you know you did something right. Jake, I appreciate you giving me a few minutes tonight. Good luck with the book sales, and everything you have to do for it. I can't wait to read it, and it's awesome you finished this off. Thank you, Jake.
Thank you, man. Happy to come back anytime.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.